This is Progressive Radio, a weekly conversation hosted by Matthew Rothschild, editor of The Progressive Magazine, a leading voice for peace and social justice. For more information about Progressive Radio or The Progressive Magazine, log on to our website at progressive.org.
I'm Matt Rothschild, and welcome to Progressive Radio, which you can also grab off our website over at progressive.org. I'm delighted to have in the studio with me today two of the so-called RNC8 protesters arrested in St. Paul during the GOP convention back in 2008, and they still await trial. Their names right here, Garrett Fitzgerald and Max Spector. Garrett, thanks for being with me.
Yeah, thank you so much for having us.
And Max, it's an honor to meet you.
Yeah, thank you.
Let's start with you, Garrett. Just give us a little background on yourself and how it came to be that you decided to become a protester.
Well, I grew up in southern Minnesota, and, you know, both my parents were very mindful people and taught me the importance of compassion. And I came to Madison for college for a year and then transferred to Minneapolis. And at the time that I was in Minneapolis, there was a lot of work going on at the U around a clerical workers strike. And so I worked a lot on the clerical workers strike. Also, the Twin Cities in Minnesota at large has a very, very strong history in the collective and cooperative movement. And so I did a lot of work in worker democracies, that sort of work. And I took a lot of inspiration out of that clerical workers strike. That was really an important moment for me, an important moment where people made strategic decisions instead of just, you know, pleading for some sort of reform. They made choices in their actions to make happen what they wanted to see happen. And I went to the RNC in 04 and went to some other things and kind of was like not super into the big mass demonstration thing. I, like a lot of people, the anti-war movement was important, but was kind of like losing steam. It didn't have a lot of direction, I felt. And, but then the RNC happened to be coming to St. Paul, and I thought, well, here's something that I should probably be a part of. This is going to be an important time, so.
And Max Spector, how did you, where'd you grow up? How'd you get interested in activist politics and bring me to St. Paul?
Yeah, I grew up in South Minneapolis and still live a few blocks from where I grew up. It was a very strong progressive community there as well. The neighborhood where I grew up in every year had a big May Day celebration, which was my favorite time of year. I didn't really understand the roots of the holiday, but I always remember it being the most... It was a very political, like, a parade and always really fun. But, so coming through that, I went to school and was always encouraged to, you know, make a lot of personal choices about what was going on in the war, in the world. And then the war in Iraq actually broke out when I was in eighth grade. And there was a lot of organizing around the city about, for a walkout, and I think me and only a few other classmates of mine walked out and we joined the high school kids, and I felt like I was part of something a lot bigger, and it was a really important moment for me, I think. And I continued to do organizing like that through high school. When the RNC was announced, I think I was just had graduated from high school and was looking for something to kind of I wanted to learn a lot more. I didn't actually know much about how to organize a big demonstration or had even been to a large demonstration like this. And I knew that it was important to, you know, defend our communities from these. It seemed like a big spectacle that was going to invade our community. And I really wanted to make sure that we were able to show what a city was really about.
And Max Spector, did you and Garrett Fitzgerald know each other beforehand, and or did you start planning protests together in the lead up, or
did you
just find yourself situated in the same place ultimately?
Yeah, most of our co-defendants didn't know each other. We didn't know each other either before the RNC or before the organizing. leading up to their incident.
And were you organizing then together? Were you in meetings together leading up?
Yeah, most of us were working with a group called the RNC Welcoming Committee that formed a year and a half to 2 years before the RNC took place. So that was where we had first met.
And what were you planning to do with the RNC Welcoming Committee? Garrett, what was the idea there that you wanted to do? Or you personally, I don't know, you can't speak for everyone in the group, but...
Well, the RNC Welcoming Committee was an explicitly anarchist and anti-authoritarian organizing body committed to providing logistical support and be a sort of like clearinghouse for information. So we ran a website where we talked about... what was being said locally about the RNC. We helped provide, we helped get food and housing for everyone. It was not just for anarchists that we worked, but we, it was important for us in our work that we made connections that went beyond the RNC, that we're targeting the RNC and we want to do that with you. We're protesting the RNC together as a community. We also, as anarchists and anti-authoritarians, want to bring this analysis that goes beyond it, that goes beyond two-party politics and that sort of things.
And Max Spector, were you guys planning protests and things too?
Well, as the RNC Welcoming Committee, like Garrett said, we kind of provided the framework for people to come and plug in. And what that means was... We called for national meetings. We had a couple nationwide meetings in the year leading up to the RNC, one a year before and one a few months before, where people were invited. We invited people to come and create a strategy, create a framework of action. And then we decided that we would promote what came out of those, which was what we called the crash the conventions or a blockade strategy to, in effect, ideally to shut down this convention, or at least get people out in a coordinated way. So we didn't plan any specific, we didn't tell people to go out and do this on the street. We provided this kind of, this idea of what, we put forward this plan that other people came together to create.
I'm Matt Rothschild. I'm the editor of the Progressive Magazine. You're listening to Progressive Radio. My guests today, Garrett Fitzgerald and Max Spector, two of the so-called RNC8 protesters who were arrested at or prior to the GOP convention in 2008, still awaiting trial, by the way. Well, Garrett Fitzgerald, why don't you take us up to the arrest? How'd you guys get arrested?
Sure. Well, just a few days before the convention, things started to get a lot more intense in St. Paul. People were being harassed and detained on the street, especially a lot of independent journalists that were down there. They would be like taking pictures of things. And
I mean, we all saw Amy Goodman get arrested too. So.
And then the convention began on September 1st, which is Labor Day, a Monday. And the Friday beforehand, so 3 days beforehand, there was the Welcoming Committee had helped put together a convergence space where people could come and have meetings or use the internet or get some food, sort of a logistical hub. And on that Friday beforehand, the police raided the convergence space. They stormed in through the doors with assault rifles drawn.
And were you there in the convergence space?
Yep, I was there. In fact, I was greeting people at the door, so I was the first one thrown to the ground.
Did they say anything when they came in? Did they warn people what happened?
They were like screaming, "Oh, police!" Just sort of like being rowdy and ordering people around. But it wasn't like a knock on the door, "Hey, we're gonna come in and detain everybody." It was like, boom, they were there. People who were upstairs in the building said that it sounded like there was a fight going on downstairs, and they weren't sure what was going on at first. And because there was a group of people that were upstairs that were watching a movie, including, a lot of elderly people, or a few elderly people, a five-year-old. The community was there, and the police just stormed in, and forced everyone to the ground, detained everybody. They didn't arrest anybody at that point. They took everyone's photograph and let everyone go and boarded up the conversion space saying that there was a fire code violation.
Did they have a warrant or anything?
They did have a warrant, yes, which is you can view the warrant on our website, rnc8.org. There's a bunch of documents from our case that have been made public, that are like public record documents. You know, they were looking for all sorts of things, including, you know, they would say, you know, bombs or bomb-making components, and oh, that sounds really scary, and then on the list it's like jars, rags, you know, paint. It's like, oh, you went to a protest, you know, conversion space, and you found paint and, like, sign-making materials? Oh, you know, whoop-de-doo.
What was your how were you feeling? What was your reaction when you saw them charge in? Do you remember your initial response, reaction, feeling?
Well, the first thing that I wanted to do is I felt, as the person who was greeting people at the door, I felt a little responsible for trying to get up and not stop them per se, but, you know, we had talked about and had some training on, you know, what to do in event of a raid, but all of those were sort of like, as I had been taught, it was like the police come and knock on your door with a search warrant. And, you know, it wasn't they bang through it. So, you know, it was scary. They're meant to scare you. And, but at that point, I kind of just thought it was harassment. I thought they were just kind of toying with us, you know, trying to scare us.
Max, were you there at the time too, or were you somewhere else?
No, I actually wasn't at the Convergence Center raid. I got wind of it, and that night we had a debriefing, and a lot of people who were involved and people who were organizing came together, and we stayed up late talking about what we should do, and people had a press conference shortly afterwards, I think. But the next morning, early the next, I think it was 8 a.m., mm-hmm. They came in, raided three of our houses, my house, Garrett's house, and one other house. And that's when they started making arrests.
And you were there.
I was not at my house that morning either. But so I missed all the raids, fortunately. But
And when did you get arrested?
I was arrested leaving my house 2 days later.
And what was that like? Did a squad car come up? Or
Right after we pulled out in a car, and it was really interesting. They had been following me, and they knew I was there, but they waited till I got in a car with a number of other people just so they could ID everyone I was with. And it's kind of how they do things. They do it in order to, you know, collect as much information as they can. So I was arrested in a car stop.
And did they tell you what you were being arrested for?
No, not at that point. They said you were under arrest.
And Garrett Fitzgerald, when they tell me how they arrested you.
Well, so I was arrested at my house during that raid at just before 8. And so I was sleeping up in my bedroom, and they banged through the doors, and they actually broke down my bedroom door, which had a lock on it, you know, 2 feet from my head, and splinters of wood went flying around. And they cuffed everybody in the house. We had some house guests staying there also.
They have a warrant again? And what was, you know, why were they allowed just to bang in?
It was almost an exact copy of the conversion space warrant. So, I mean, it was very clear that they either didn't really know where anything was, or they knew better than to actually think that anything was anywhere in particular. So they used this same broad, general stuff.
And what did they say when they banged into your bedroom?
It was all that same sort of commands, mm-hmm. you know, get on the floor, blah, blah, blah. I think the first thing they told me to do was put my hands behind my back because I lied down and waited for them to come through the door on my stomach with my hands up over my head. And so I moved my hands back behind my back and was cuffed and taken downstairs, and I was put in a squad car, and I asked what my charges were. At that point, there was a big crowd, and I think they were different at that point. They were, I believe, conspiracy to riot, conspiracy to commit criminal damage to property, and probable cause. These were all probable cause charges, and probable cause, conspiracy to commit disorderly conduct or something like that. So those were just the probable cause charges that the police were using. They're not official. They can hold you on what's called a PC hold until you can be before a judge, and those were what the charges that they used for that.
You've been listening to Garrett Fitzgerald, one of the RNC8, and Max Spector, another member of the RNC8, is here talking with me, Matt Rothschild of The Progressive. This is Progressive Radio. We're talking about essentially preemptive arrest, which is not supposed to be legal in the United States, but is happening more and more. It happened in this case and has happened in others. Max Spector, what's your reaction to that kind of preemptive arrest? It goes against the First Amendment tradition. There is a tradition of repression, too, but it goes against the constitutional tradition of free speech, free assembly.
Yeah. In this specific instance, after the arrest and we had been sitting in jail, we got our charges, official charges. I didn't actually think that this would stick. You know, we weren't at the RNC. Not all of us missed the RNC. The protests that they're alleging we caused riots at. So it seemed like pretty simple that, yeah, all right, they're arresting us to keep us off the streets. That made sense. I understood that this, yeah, as a strategy to quell free speech and protest, they're going to arrest people. But I didn't understand that they could actually charge and continue to keep us on trial for something that they said we were going to do or that we were conspiring to do.
Garrett Fitzgerald, aren't you surprised that they haven't dropped the charges? And far from dropping the charges, they escalated the charges at the beginning.
You know, I definitely thought that they were going to drop the charges early on. But I wouldn't go as far as to say I'm surprised that they're still charging us, not because we did anything wrong, but because there is also an equally strong tradition in this country of criminalizing dissent. Lots of people know about the Chicago 8 in 68 out of the Democratic National Convention. More recently, there was a group called the Shack 7, who were animal rights activists who were convicted of conspiracy for running a website that gave information on a campaign against Huntington Life Sciences, which is a vivisection group that tests on animals. And so... it's not surprising in that it's not without precedent, although it is not what I expected.
But they did drop charges against a lot of people, is my understanding. Yeah. And they did it against you two and the other six people of the RNC8. And in fact, at some point early on, they charged you with conspiracy to riot and furtherance of terrorism, which was... a use of a Patriot Act or Patriot Act-like statute in Minnesota that shows what a lot of that was so broadly drawn that it would bring in these kinds of just real domestic protest actions. What was your reaction, Max Spector, when you got hit with that charge?
Yeah, the terrorism enhancement, it actually carries with it raise the maximum sentence by 50% of any charge. And in Minnesota, it's actually more broad than the federal legislation, where in Minnesota, any felony that is intended to, says, coerce or intimidate persons or like government, anything with a political message, basically, can be deemed a terrorist.
And this is why I've always said that under the Patriot Act, Martin Luther King Jr. would have been called a terrorist, prosecuted for being a terrorist because he was trying to intimidate the population to change Jim Crow laws by sitting down in the street and engaging in civil disobedience.
So, yeah, like one of our lawyers has said that if a felony damage to property is anything over $1,000 in Minnesota. So if someone went and wrote some political message on a wall and it took $1,000 to clean up, it could be tried under this terrorist law. Fortunately, I thought that it would get dropped, but it took a lot of work. And we did get them dropped, but it took people all over the state and all over the country to come out and tell our prosecutor that they're not going to allow us to be charged as terrorists.
And Garrett Fitzgerald, what are you being charged with right now?
So the two charges that remain are conspiracy to riot in the second degree, which means basically a riot with a dangerous weapon, and conspiracy to commit criminal damage to property, which is damage to property in excess of $1,000. They're both felonies. Each of them has a maximum sentence of 5 years in prison and a $5,000 fine, I believe. So
you guys are facing 10 years in jail?
At the most, yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Well, that's not nothing.
Right.
Tell me, Max Spector, about this charge about conspiracy to riot with a dangerous weapon, especially the dangerous weapon part.
Yeah.
What's that about?
That's the funny thing is, we don't know. They haven't. Hopefully, if we at this hearing, we're going to contest the complaint. We're going to contest probable cause. And they haven't actually spelled out what the merits of the case are. And one of the merits of the charge has to be spelling out exactly what they mean by that dangerous weapon. And the scary part is that they might just say that because people at the RNC had dangerous weapons, because people were planning to bring Molotov cocktails, people that we had no knowledge of, had never even talked to, they might try to insinuate that we caused that to happen, and therefore we're guilty of it.
And Garrett Fitzgerald, do you have anything to add on this dangerous weapon charge?
No, I mean, I think that's pretty much where we stand right now, is that we're not sure what they're going to call a dangerous weapon. One thing that I've learned about the law since this process began is how abstract it actually is. Like, you think of the law as being a concrete thing, but there's just so much room for interpretation. A lot of it depends on what the judge thinks, and the lawyers both argue two totally different interpretations. I mean, I think that, like, you know, a penny dropped off the Empire State Building, it could be a dangerous weapon, you know? So a lot of it's about, like, what people's intent is, and, like, it's a really complicated sort of...
Now, were there, Max Spector, were there undercover agents in your group that were either surreptitiously taking stuff down or, even worse, acting as agents provocateurs, do you know?
Yeah, well, there's cases of both, not necessarily in our case, but there is our group, the RNC Welcoming Committee, had opened public meetings for a year and a half, 2 years before the convention, and somewhere around a year before, Ramsey County, the county of St. Paul, sent informants and employees to our meetings to work as informants. And they came to, I don't know, I'm sure they each came to over like 20 meetings.
Did either of you suspect that there was someone undercover there?
I think it was something that we were definitely aware of the historical precedent of, but it was this thing where this is an open meeting. We were talking about pretty normal protest logistics, and it didn't seem like something that could actually come back to bite us. But there were also FBI informants. There's three around the country who did work relating to the RNC, one in Iowa, one in Texas, and one in the Twin Cities. We mentioned how they acted as agent provocateur to three different people who are now in prison because they helped them build Molotov cocktails.
I'm Matt Rothschild. You're listening to Progressive Radio. That was just Max Spector talking, and he's here with Garrett Fitzgerald. They're two of the RNC8 so-called protesters arrested in St. Paul during the GOP convention, now charged with conspiracy to riot with a dangerous weapon and conspiracy to commit damage to property. And they could face 10 years in jail if they get convicted on both of those. And the trial, Garrett, when is the trial scheduled for?
October 25th, I believe, is the end of October.
If it doesn't get dismissed, I'm shocked that it hasn't been dismissed yet. We've got about 4 minutes left, but briefly, why don't you give people an idea of how they might be able to support you or find more information out about this?
Sure. Well, we have a website that's being run by our defense committee. rnc8.org, and on that you can get a lot of other information about what's happening with our case. You can sign up to get email updates, see some of the public documents and motions that are pending. There's a PayPal button there if people have some money and can donate. Beyond that, I think that, like, you know, we're in Madison this week because some folks organized an event here. You know, people who are feeling more ambitious want to do stuff like that. That's always really, really helpful in getting the word out. But most importantly, I think finding something in your community that you're passionate about, that you want to see happen, and taking initiative and acting, with taking your own agency and acting to make your community better.
Are you still doing political work, Garrett?
Trying to, as much as I can, you know.
And what are you doing just to make ends meet? What do you do professionally?
Well, I've been mostly working as a preschool teacher up to this point. I'm a substitute. I coming out of the worker co-op movement, I was working at a co-op in Southern Minnesota that just went out of business. And I had a great opportunity to start subbing at a childcare collective, a worker collective that does childcare. And so I started working there and sort of expanded to work at other schools from that. So,
and Max Spector, what are you doing now?
I'm doing a number of different jobs. I do delivery on my bicycle, a bike courier, and I help out at my mother's cafe and do some PCA work.
What's that?
It's taking care of someone with Down syndrome, like a personal care attendant.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And Max, have you considered pleading to a lesser charge, or what's your sense on this?
I don't know what we're guilty of, so, and they haven't offered us anything worth even noting, so.
And Garrett, what's your view of that?
Yeah, I mean, I think the way the system works by trying to scare people into taking pleas, I think that, you know, it's important for us to, that we're going to take all the agency that we can in this process.
And what, Garrett Fitzgerald, what do you want people to conclude, having heard this conversation we're having, or part of it, or having learned or read a little bit about what happened up in St. Paul in 2008?
That, you know, state repression happens every day, and this was a particularly visible instance of it. We're in court and we see, you know, a lot of disproportionately, like, poor people and people of color being railroaded through the justice system, and that this is a big problem worth being concerned about. And also that we're not heroes, and that anyone can do what we did, and that, you know, getting out in your community and making things happen is something that, you know, anyone can take the agency to do.
Lots of people do what we did and more, but they fortunately aren't charged for what they're, for the good work that they do.
Well, people shouldn't be charged and preemptively arrested for engaging in First Amendment rights. I want to thank both of you, Garrett Fitzgerald, Max Spector, two of the RNC 8. You can find out more information about their case and them and their colleagues at rnc8.org. Thanks very much.
Thanks, ma'am.
Today's program is available online at progressive.org. You can also write to us at 409 East Main Street, Madison, Wisconsin, 53703. Our music is by Mufa. Progressive Radio is produced by Elizabeth DiNovella and engineered at Audio for the Arts in Madison, Wisconsin.